So this is our reading. In Simple Truths, Ken Nurban states, giving is a miracle that can transform the heaviest of hearts. Two people who moments before lived in separate worlds of private concerns suddenly meet each other over a simple act of sharing. The world expands. A moment of goodness is created, and something new comes into being where before there was nothing new. But true giving is not an economic exchange. It is a generative act. It does not subtract from what we have. It multiplies the effect we can have in the world. Research has consistently shown that religious people are more generous than other people. So a few years ago, a study asked the question, what is it in the religious experience that might prompt generosity? The researchers decided to study Catholics and Muslims to see what it was about their faith that inspired them to be generous. They held interviews, they participated in religious group activities, and conducted experiments. And the Muslims told the researchers that when they felt blessed, they had an obligation to God to share with those who were less fortunate. Catholics said their love for Jesus motivated them to help others. And I thought this study was really odd, because it did not seem that you needed $363,000 to discover those answers. Both the Catholic and Muslim perspectives on generosity are the teachings of their respective faith. A conversation with the local priest or imam might have uncovered the same information. Or even an internet search on Islam and generosity or Catholic and generosity could have explained that. The study's conclusion, it seemed to me, did not come close to answering the question, what is it in the religious experience that might prompt generosity? The researchers had uncovered the teachings of particular faiths. Those teachings and religious experience are not the same thing. However, at the end of the article about the study, one of the researchers did say, for many of the study participants, the experience of being generous is in and of itself profoundly religious. I wondered if the researchers had tried to answer the question, why is it people experience generosity as religious, they might have gotten a real answer to their question. Unfortunately, though, I don't think that we need a research study to discover the answer to that question either. Because for millennia, religious leaders, spiritual gurus, and mystics have been explaining why it is that generosity and being religious are linked. The word religion comes from the Latin religare, to bind fast, and used to mean a place of obligation on, or a bond between humans and gods. Religion, therefore, binds us back to our communities, to our sense of connection to the powers beyond us, and to a profound realization that everything is interconnected. Generosity is the virtue of giving good things to others freely and abundantly. It means giving those things that are good for others to enhance their well-being. A person can be generous with money, possessions, time, attention, aid, encouragement, emotional availability, and more. All of the major world religions advocate generosity. In Hinduism, the cultivation of generosity, called dana, is an important virtue and practice. Buddhism teaches that 10 perfections are required to become an enlightened person. Generosity is the first perfection. Giving to charity is one of the 5 pillars of Islam. It is called zakat, which means purification of the heart. To give more than required is praised and called tzedakah, meaning giving to please God. Giving to charity is also required in traditional Judaism. People are asked to give 10% of their income to those who need it. However, Giving grudgingly because they should is not considered favorable. They strive to give joyfully, without being asked and without being known. In Christianity, the works of Jesus are the model for generosity. Jesus helped the sick and poor and bid his followers to do so as well. For whoever has the world's goods and beholds his brother in need and closes his heart against him, how does the love of God abide in him? John 1. Clearly the world faith agree that being generous is a central spiritual and religious act. Giving is either required by faith, and or practitioners are told that being generous is required for spiritual development. Of course, we are Unitarian Universalists, and most of us are very unlikely to convert to Islam and give our required amount to charity because Muhammad said so 1,400 years ago. And the tradition continues to insist on that practice. If we practice Buddhism, we are likely to take up the practices that are appealing and speak to our hearts in the moment, but we are unlikely to do something that radically changes how we perceive or interact with the world just because the tradition says it's important for our development. We have to believe it's important for our development first. So we have to have solid reasons based on logic or science, not just religious tradition, to believe a practice is a good idea before we are mostly going to do it. So, why does generosity as a spiritual practice make sense? And here are the findings from Western research. Being generous makes us feel good. It makes us happy. Research has consistently shown that using time and money for other people's benefit makes us happier than spending time and money on ourselves. Happy people volunteer 5.6 hours a week, compared with unhappy people who volunteer only 0.6 hours a week. Those who are hospitable are happier than those who are not. Studies show that generosity triggers the happiness chemicals in our brain, including dopamine, endorphins that block pain signals, and oxytocin, known as the tranquility hormone. People who are generous are less likely to suffer from depression and social isolation. People who volunteer have less trouble sleeping, less anxiety, less helplessness and hopelessness, better friendships and social networks, and a sense of control over chronic conditions. People who give away more than 10% of their income are less depressed than those who give less away. Being generous makes us healthier and more likely to live longer. It lowers blood pressure, risk of dementia, and reduces cardiovascular disease. One study found that helping others eliminated the stress risk factor in disease development. Another found people who contributed time or money or two or more causes reduced the risk of mortality by 63% compared to those who gave nothing at all. This could, like, put the pharmaceutical business out of business. The religious argument for generosity goes like this, and it explains the findings of science. As we practice generosity, we notice not just our own needs and wants, but other people's needs and wants. We discover their connection to us. We lose our sense of separateness. Generosity helps us be more trusting. When we practice generosity, we experience the truth taught in so many faiths that when we give, we receive more. An ancient Hebrew proverb reads, "One man gives freely, but gains even more. Another withholds unduly, but ends up impoverished." The Buddha taught giving brings happiness at every stage of its expression. A Hindu proverb says, "Those who give all things, they who withhold have nothing." Generosity builds social connections. A group in San Francisco wanted to harvest fruit in people's yards to give to the hungry. They knocked on doors and met homeowners who were delighted to share their fruit. Quickly, homeowners and fruit pickers became friends and acquaintances, and when the fruit pickers gave the fruit away, they developed more relationships with the people who shared their fruit. It bound their community together in a new way. Generosity also moves us from scarcity to abundance. When we give and receive and give more and receive more, we learn more is available to us than we knew, more than enough. When we are generous, the world blossoms and we flourish. We become like the young boys at a birthday party who decided the next thing they wanted to do was wash people's cars. People pulled up to have their cars washed, assuming it was a fundraiser. "No, no," the boys said, "we are practicing our generosity." The drivers got out of their cars, surprised and startled. They got to know the boys and the other drivers. At the same time, the boys' neighbor relationships got stronger because they were working together for others. Happiness, abundance, abounded, as did the connections between people in that neighborhood. And then there's the story of the out-of-work woman who, in a moment of inspiration, decided to gift a cup of coffee to the next customer, and she began a chain of giving that went on all day long, bringing pleasure to every customer. She was so happy to learn that this had happened that she began gifting a cup of coffee every week. American culture is not a generous culture. Americans can be very generous, particularly when there's a crisis. Individuals and families can be generous as part of who they are. Others learn the blessing of generosity through their faith or their ethical tradition. However, our individualistic consumer culture does not advocate generosity. This has a great deal to do with how we think about money. American cultures define money in three significant ways. And if you grew up American, most of us, at least partially, think about money in these ways, at least part of the time. Money is security. We depend on money for shelter, food, clothing, and other basics that keep us safe and healthy. How much money we have or don't have can make us feel terribly anxious. We live in a culture that gawks at the overindulgence of the very rich while warning everyone of scarcity. There's only so much to go around. If we want to be safe, we are often taught and often truly feel, we need to hold on to our money tightly. We are also taught that money is happiness. Money buys us the things and experiences that we most want. Our individualistic culture teaches us that we should accumulate money and use our time for our own happiness. We learn that money is self-worth. How much we make, how much we've saved, how much debt we are in determines our value. We demonstrate this value to our families and neighbors by the houses we live in, cars we drive, vacations we go on, and the stuff that we own. We live in a culture that shames people who are deemed unworthy. Consider the moral and character judgments directed at people who cannot work or have low-wage jobs, and who have houses and cars to match. No one wants to be shamed for not demonstrating their access to money. There are, however, other ways to think about money. In the book, Your Money or Your Life, Joe Dominguez and Vicki Robin define money as life energy. We trade our life energy for tangible dollar bills. In The Soul of Money, Lynn Twist uses the metaphor of water to describe money. Money flows through the world. It can carry our love or our fear, she says. We are each born filled with life energy. It is abundant in our very beings. And during our lives, we get to choose how we direct that life energy into the world. We choose how to use it. We may transform our life energy into money. We may give it as time. We may use it to learn or create. We may use it to be with ourselves or to be with others. What we do with money sends our life energy out into the world in particular ways. And we can use it for love, or we can use it for kindness, or fear, or meanness. If as a country we spend $10 billion to conduct war, we direct fear into our world. If we use $10 billion for healthcare, we direct love into the world. When we think of money as our very life energy, we can recognize that those dollar bills are simply nodes of energy within our interdependent web. When we think of money as self-worth, security, and happiness, money becomes a means to fulfill individual needs and wants. And we forget that our life energy has and can have effects on everyone in the web. Generosity is the act that shifts that worldview. Through generosity, we experience the interconnectedness of everything and powers greater than ourselves. We experience being bound within our communities. Through generosity, we learn that money is not security, not happiness, and not an indicator of worth of any kind. We learn that money is our life energy acting in the world. It's fluid. It is, as Nurburn said in this morning's reading, but true giving is not an economic exchange. It is a generative act. It does not subtract from what we have. It multiplies the effect that we have in the world. Karen Armstrong, a religious historian and the initiator of the Charter of Compassion, said, "Religion is not about believing things. It's ethical alchemy. It's about behaving in a way that changes you, that gives you intimations of holiness and sacredness." In other words, we must behave differently to experience and know another way of being and understanding this world that we live in. Reading and writing about it and intellectually appreciating something is not what transforms us. Doing does. Experiencing does. In other words, religions advocate the practice of generosity because it is only through the act of being generous that people can experience how all of life is bound together. American culture is not a generous culture, but through practice, we can all be generous people. This means not just giving what we can afford to give, that amount left over after we have accounted for all of our needs and wants on our ledgers. We giving because we want to be giving people. We give because we want to send our life energy into the world. We want our energy to carry love and joy and kindness and hospitality wherever it goes. We give because we want to generate goodness. We give because we want our values to flow into the world. We give so we can know the joy of being part of the interconnected web of life. But practicing generosity is not particularly easy. The needs and wants of our own lives can cloud our ability to see where our generosity is needed. We get caught in the busyness of our own concerns, and we don't notice where our help or a kind word might benefit someone. We fear we won't have enough money for all the contingencies. We can't imagine how to volunteer because it seems like we can't even get our own stuff done. We don't listen fully to someone else because our mind is flooded with our own stories and worries. And unfortunately, the research says that when it comes to experiencing the benefits of generosity, you can't just stick your toe in and see what happens. You can't give blood once, contribute to charity several months later, and sometime later give change to a homeless person, and expect to transform profoundly the way that you perceive and appreciate life. You must be all in. You have to decide that being generous is going to be your basic approach to life. Your attitude matters too. You have to genuinely want the well-being of others. You can't give grudgingly and hope for a reward like the neighbor in today's story. But the very good news is it is a practice, and practicing is fine. And you don't have to get it right every time. You just have to decide from now on you're going to be a generous person and just keep working at it. The spiritual practice of generosity works like this. You decide every day to practice generosity in all different ways. Money, possessions, time, assistance, emotional availability, kind words. Then you pay attention and you notice opportunities. You'll forget, but you come back to it day after day, and after a while, you are feeling and acting in a more generous way as a habit of your life. The promise of the faith traditions and science is it will change your life. But you must have faith. The scarcity, worth, and individualistic demons of American culture will haunt you on the way. They will tell you how crazy being generous is, how it is wrong, how you will suffer. So you just have to have faith. You have to take the plunge. That's one of the reasons it's part of religious tradition and practice. They tell people, do it. Take the plunge. And it is only our lived experience that will determine whether those claims made about generosity are true. You can't know until you've done it. So I want to try end with one other discovery I made while doing generosity research. A study found that if you are considering giving away money and decide to keep it for yourself instead, the stress hormone cortisol rises in your blood. So, for example, you think of a big amount you would like to give to this congregation because you really believe that a three-quarter time minister at a three-quarter time DRE will help, will flourish, and that an increase in social justice budget would make a huge difference in the ways that we can build the beloved community. And then you stop and you think, no, that's way too much. We can't afford that. We have other obligations. What was I thinking when I thought that big number? At that moment, at that very moment, when you stop being excited about giving and start thinking about security, personal health, happiness, and worth, your cortisol levels begin to rise. This increases your stress level, which compromises your sense of well-being and your long-term health. The takeaway is, once that big amount pops into your mind, the most joyful and healthiest thing that you can do is just write it down and sign your pledge form. So let us rise.
Thank you so much, Tracy. We have maybe a couple of minutes for some questions.
You mentioned having to have faith to be generous. I would just point out, you already have faith in the world being scarce.
Right.
There's no real difference.
Well, it's a big difference to jump. Like, to think it's scarce and decide it's abundant, that's a move.
Good words on generosity, and I was thinking of my conservative friends. And they're generous also, and they're interconnected. But it's like only within this sphere. It doesn't go beyond that.
Mm-hmm.
And
it's
how you get to that, we're all interconnected, not just
right.
within our church or our community,
right.
but everywhere.
That's the danger. Religion binds you to your community without making the community large enough. So that's one of the challenges for humans is to figure out how not to otherize people. Like, how do we not otherize conservatives or otherize Trump or Trump supporters? Like, it's another of the really big challenges of being human.
Hi, Tracy. It kind of reminds me of a line from a play that I've seen. And it says, money and manure are the same thing. They do absolutely no good unless you spread them around.
Great.
I think that's probably a good one to end on. Thank you so much.